Honey, I blew up the business.
Welcome to the podcast, Katie Baxter. Lovely to see you.
Morning.
Well, morning. Yes, indeed, it's a good morning. Yeah, where we are, it's morning, and it's a good morning. The sun is shining, and we're all feeling positive.
Yeah.
I'm very excited to have Katie on our podcast. She's a very, very experienced entrepreneur, and she's been going through some changes in recent years that we're going to dig into. So thank you for being on our podcast, Katie.
Thanks for inviting me, Dan. It's very exciting.
Yeah, well, for those who don't know, the reason why I'm doing this podcast is I blew my business up in 2017, and my life, actually. I did a real proper job. I sort of blew the whole thing up, and through lots of hard work and, I would say, learning, I turned things around, but only just. I'm no smarty pants. The whole podcast is I'm on a mission to learn, and by chatting to great entrepreneurs like Katie, you, the listener, can help avoid the mistakes I made and learn and grow. So I'm excited because Katie's got over 30 years experience working in the financial services sector.
Is that exciting, Dan?
It is exciting because it's a whole bunch of experience that I'm going to dig into and with loads of information in there. But running family business advisory firms and a specialist wills and trust business.
Yeah.
She's also UK chair at Million Dollar Roundtable, or MDRT.
I was.
You was. Ah, yeah. I see. Yeah, but explain what the MDRT is, because it's a Million Dollar Roundtable. Says I've got this vision in my head of it being $1 million on a table that's round.
Well, that's how it started in many ways. I think it was £1 million or $1 million worth of life insurance. And as an advisor, if you'd done that in the year, you'd arrange £1 million worth of life insurance for clients, then you qualified to join $1 million roundtable, MDRT. And it started at the beginning of the 1900s. And we now have, I think it's over 90,000 members in around 80 countries around the world. So it's a huge international organization. And I've been very privileged to be part of the committees, both here in the UK and internationally. And that's been a huge growth experience for me. It's something that I've loved doing over the last 13 or 14 years.
Brilliant. I mean, so she's a leader in her field, put it that way, at the highest levels. And she's a very keen supporter of various charities. And there's been lots of change in the recent years. And she's just recently launched a new business called Montgomery Estate Planning. We're going to get into that. But I'm going to just remind you, the listener, if you haven't done it so far, please subscribe to the podcast and leave a 5-star review, 5 stars, not 4. And tell your friends about this podcast, because I'm trying to help people and you can help me help people. But I'm going to go back in time, actually way back in time, because I had a little bit of a sort of prep conversation with Katie, and I was intrigued that she was going to start her career as an artist.
Yeah.
And then you didn't do that. So what happened?
Well, that's an interesting question, Dan. I was all set to be an artist, fairly academic at school, but my love of getting knee deep in clay and paint overruled everything else. And I was going to go and do a graphic art degree. But I had some careers advice at school, which wasn't great, and decided that I wouldn't head off in that direction. Initially, I would take a year out and then apply to uni. And it just so happened that my dad, who was working in financial services, had just started his own company and he needed some help. I thought, well, I'm going to spend a year helping him get the business up and running. And in the end, I was so motivated by the business side of things. And I so loved talking to clients that actually the year came and went and I hadn't really noticed. And, you know, before too long, I was taking my exams so that I could become qualified in the world of giving financial advice. And that was the beginning of my career path.
Interesting. So when you said you had the careers advice or bad careers advice, what did you mean by that?
Well, for me, the advice was to go and do a 1 year art foundation course so that I could find myself. And I'd already found myself at that stage, and I didn't want to go and do that course. Mm. I actually wanted to go and work in television. I'd had some great work experience working for the BBC, actually, in their training department, doing some graphic art for them before the world of computers. Mm. And you had to, you know, hand paint beautiful titles for programs. And so the foundation course was not something I wanted to do in the end. So I thought I would have the year out and then apply direct to go and do my graphic art degree.
Okay, but then you got caught into the family business, and yeah, that didn't happen.
Yeah,
yeah. So it's interesting. I had a similar. I actually did my art foundation course.
Right, you needed to find yourself then.
I don't know about finding myself. I ended up leaving home and getting drunk a lot. But like,
I could see, and I'll just remind you of an experience where I turned up at Middlesex Poly in order to have my interview for my foundation course. And I remember the doors opening, and it was a few seconds before the smoke cleared. And I could see these comatose bodies across the floor. And there I was, very smartly dressed with my portfolio, picking my way across these comatose bodies to get to the reception. I thought, do you know what? This isn't me.
Really?
Yeah. The comatose bit came later.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think at that point in my life, I thought that it probably was me, but like, that's a whole other story. But going back to Katie's life story, but so you had this sort of near miss of a creative career, yeah, which I think is interesting. And I'd like to come back to that at some point as a theme, about creativity and art and entrepreneurship and how that all weds together. So your father had just started his business, and then you started to help, and then you got drawn into it in the sense of you enjoyed working with clients and you enjoyed learning about that. So what happened then? Instead of going to university, you went into the university of life, or the university of small business, family business.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it was a brand new business. At that stage, we were working out of my mum and dad's conservatory at home before we moved into offices locally. But I just became very fascinated with the business side, you know, being part of a growing business from very early on in the journey. And all aspects of that, you know, how we were going to market our services, the types of clients that we were looking for, the niche that we were looking to work in at that stage. And I found that absolutely fascinating. And I think when I reflected back on what I wanted out of an art career, or a career in art, should I say, was I actually wanted to run my own business. That was a big part of what my young vision was. And, the business side of things was being fulfilled by working with my dad and our growing team in those early stages of our financial services business.
Mm. So you found yourself channeling your creativity into the business building.
Yeah. And I think, you know, creativity is the word, Dan, because every day is the opportunity for creativity. It might not be, putting pen to paper or paint on paper, but, you know, we are all creators of, the businesses that we're putting together, creators of the solutions for our clients. There's a huge amount of creativity that comes into what we're doing every day.
Yeah, it's very true. And I have a little hypothesis subplot that is artists and entrepreneurs are basically the same in the sense that they kind of intuit from the world something.
I think so. You've got to have that creative streak in you in order to be an entrepreneur. I mean, that's absolutely for sure. I guess maybe the difference is how much risk you're prepared to take. And I think being an entrepreneur, it comes with risk. And that might be the difference.
Yeah, I mean, I know a few artists, and I'd say their lives are fraught with risk as well.
Yeah.
Because they're skint. But like, But no, but I think it's a fair point. I think it's a sort of they're divergent. It's not the same disciplines, but there's a lot of common patterns there. And I've seen a number of people actually I've interviewed on the podcast who've got a arty background, but are now running a company. And I just think there's some of the kind of skills you need to actually survive is creative.
Yeah.
So you've kind of gone into your father's business. You've kind of fallen in love with it. You're getting drawn into this world of entrepreneurship and channeling your creativity into that. So what was going on then in terms of how did you sort of find your feet in this growing family business?
My dad was very successful at what he did. And I like to think I was a chip off the old block. Probably less of the old, if dad's listening. I just wanted to learn, really, and learn from him. Also, at that stage, you know, we are talking about, Dan, 30 years ago, mm. 30 years ago when I started in financial services, there were not many women out there giving advice. And, you know, that was a huge opportunity with, a little bit of knowledge. And the fact I knew I had the advantage of being different in that environment, it was a dangerous combination. I thoroughly enjoyed getting immersed in the world of building, you know, strong client relationships and, you know, making a huge impact and difference to people's lives and their families' lives through the medium of giving solid financial advice.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. You're in this kind of, you're a young woman, I guess you're kind of, you know, instead of university, you're in this business. So how was that then, being a 30 years ago young woman in a man's world? And you said that there's something interesting about the value of being different. Could you just expand on that and what that experience was like for you?
Yeah, sure. Back in the day, being a female financial advisor was a bit different. And, you know, I was very conscious of that. And when I would, you know, spend time with peers or I'd go to, various events or conferences or whatever, there was, you know, a very clear, picture of financial services at that stage. There weren't very many women in it. Mm. And, you know, I felt that was a distinct advantage for me. And then having a bit of confidence behind me, you know, after a few years of working in that profession, I felt that actually I was finding my feet nicely in that profession and started to do quite well. It felt good, Dan.
Really? That's interesting. So you're kind of like, kind of the fact you were different, you found a source of inspiration perhaps or motivation?
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, I was still learning from, you know, the successful people in financial services. And, you know, there were some extremely strong female leaders at that time in our profession, as obviously as well as strong male role models, my dad being one of them. So I had a desire to grow in that profession. Mm. And having the advantage of being female 30 years ago, I'm still female, funnily enough, but female 30 years ago in that business was an advantage at that stage.
And how do you build on that? So you kind of, in effect, you're building your confidence like anybody in a career. You're in a world which is predominantly male. You've kind of been able to see that as an opportunity rather than perhaps a threat. So how did you build your confidence and how did you use that opportunity?
Yes, well, we were building a business. You know, Dad, myself, our co-director, our team, we were building a business, and our chosen niche, my dad and my co-director's speciality at that stage was giving advice to the medical and dental profession. So, you know, I was building confidence in a world of professionals. And in order to be successful at giving advice to professional people who were in the main somewhat more mature than myself, I had to be confident about the advice I was giving, confident in myself, confident in my ability to solve their problems. And that's that's how I was growing and developing in the business, was building my own confidence through gaining knowledge and, you know, having strong mentors.
So you were kind of looking for that advice and looking for that guidance and yeah. applying that as you're sort of out there in the world.
Yeah.
Could you give us any examples of how you where you, how that worked? You know, in terms of where did you kind of find that information? How do you kind of find a mentor?
Yeah, actually, Dan, that was a very interesting part of the journey, because there I was, a relatively young woman, working with my father and our co-director, who was similar age to my dad, working with quite a lot of people who were a bit older than me, finding my peer group in that environment was quite difficult, actually. And there were a few things that happened. Firstly, I became part of the what was the Life Insurance Association that turned into PFS, Personal Finance Society. I hope that's what PFS stands for. and then finding MDRT, Million Dollar Round Table, these things actually opened up the opportunity to find a really strong peer group. And, you know, my career then catapulted forwards quite significantly at that point in time, because there was this whole, environment with people just like me, gosh. Mm. And to be able to learn from people not just more mature than me, but you know, the same age as me, form some really strong connections, make friendships, in those environments, actually has stood the test of time. And here, sort of 15, maybe moving towards 20 years, if I actually think about it later, some really solid friendships and mentors that I discovered, came across during that period of time. It also led me to Strategic Coach. I know you've talked about Strategic Coach, Dan, on previous podcasts, and talk to other strategic coach clients and coaches. And that had a massive, massive impact on me. So the combination of finding MDRT and Strategic Coach has been very, very significant in my entrepreneurial journey.
So how long did you think it from kickoff of the new business or your father's business when you joined it from your year off? How long did it take you to find those networks? I mean, how long does that sort of process take?
That took 15, at least 15 years, Dan. Mm. And maybe it's because I wasn't looking for it, but it was probably the fact that I didn't know those things were there. But it was actually being, coming across people at industry events that then, started to build up those connections, and people saying, come on, you've got to be part of this. You know, this is great. Come and see this. And, my dad had actually been a member of MDRT for a number of years, but never actually gone to any of the annual meetings or, explored the connections, because he was very much an island. He was very, very motivated and self-disciplined in a way that was quite impressive. And I'm not sure I've ever been quite like that. But in many ways, I don't think he needed that in the same way. But it's only when I found it that I realized that it had been a big missing link for a good decade or so. It was great to come across that support network.
Yeah, it's funny, I found personally I kind of for years had a the myth of the sort of entrepreneur as this sort of forging, isolated hero, conquering the unknown. Yeah. And I kind of, it took me a long time to work out that I should probably get some coaching or help, and I think it's something that, I think the quicker you realize that the network around you, or people around you, or the groups that you can consult with as peers, it is a sort of self-correcting mechanism almost.
I think it's fundamental. Dan, I mean, it really is fundamental. And, you know, when I was reading through some of the questions that you had suggested you might ask me today, you know, I was thinking about what I've learned from failure or from those early days in my career. What's really made the difference is the collaboration side of things, is the fact that I know I can't do everything. And actually, I'm no good at everything. And I really, really don't want to do everything. I only want to do one at a push, two things, and I'm struggling to think what the second thing is.
Okay, hang on, time out. What's the one thing you want to do then?
I only want to spend time with like-minded people that fit into my niche for being clients of my business. Because I am fascinated with other people, what makes them tick, their businesses, their loves, their aspirations, and in my business, particularly their legacy. You know, how they want to be remembered by the people they love, what they can do today that changes the future for their loved ones. You know, that's the only thing that I want to do, is have those conversations. And, you know, in order for me to excel as an entrepreneur in that place, in my, you know, my happy place, my unique ability place, I have to have a strong team around me, people that deliver the other services, people whose unique ability is the other things that I need in order for us to actually build a whole business.
Yeah, I think this idea of the team around you, and the team is an elastic word. In the team can be people employed by you, but it can also be like you say your MDRT team.
It's a bigger thing. Yeah. It's your support network. And that's, you know, people within the business, that's people outside of the business, people that deliver the things you need in order to be successful at, in my case, the one thing that I want to do.
A couple of things are running around my head now. How long is it taking you to work out that level of clarity?
Do you know what, Dan? It's taken me a long time. It's taken me a long time to work out that. And, you know, I can't deny it's some failures along the way from a business perspective that have probably, you know, given me the clarity that I needed in order to set up my new business in the way that it's set up. You know, that understanding of me, because you know, I don't think we spend a lot of time sometimes thinking about what it is that makes us tick. We can do all sorts of things. We're capable and, you know, competent in doing all sorts of things. Do we want to do them? Do we like doing them? In my case, no, not much, not often. There are some things that you have to do, and you just get your head down and clear those things early on in the day. But you know, what do I really want to do? What's the thing that inspires me? What do I love doing? You know, that's taken a few years to really concentrate on that and think about that. And I've got to say that strategic coach have been the massive contributor to helping me identify, you know, what I uniquely like to do. What's the thing that makes me tick? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that the experiences over the years in business have really helped me understand, you know, what it is that I want to do. Can I just do that and run a business? If I'm just in my sweet spot, can I make that a business? Yeah, I can.
Yeah, it's very empowering, that realization and that clarity. And it's taken me a long, I mean, I'm still working on it. It's an ongoing project.
Yeah, like, me too.
You know, it's like the, you know, chipping away at it, like the never ending sculpture or what have you. You've intimated that there's some teaching moments for you that's helped you clarify that. You know, again, whether you call that failures or experiences or the downs as well as the ups. What would be the things that have helped you inform that learning on your kind of entrepreneurial journey? Yeah.
So I think I just want to be clear on the question there, Dan, because there's obviously a difference between teaching and learning. Mm. The learning has been, you know, when I think about my business life and I think about the last maybe 5 years, 10 years or so, I think I've learned from the fact that whilst we were running a very successful business, there were areas of it that were being ignored. And, you know, if I was to put my finger on my biggest failure or our biggest failure 10, 15 years ago, it was the fact that we probably weren't changing fast enough. And the foundations of the business need to be looked at and reconsidered on a regular basis. Technology comes along. And, you know, if you stand still for too long, then you're going to lose a lot of ground. And so it's that sort of thing that I think maybe we weren't paying enough attention to. And then when my dad decided that it was time to retire, we were not prepared enough as a business for that to actually happen smoothly and successfully. And I think the result of that has been a big steep learning curve for me. So that's where I've, you know, that was the sort of the beginning of some serious learning. Teaching was, well, you know, actually it was learning from how other people had dealt with things, spending time with entrepreneurs, with entrepreneurs in family businesses, talking to, you know, people that had been through it and had those experiences in the world of financial services, not just financial services, in the world in general. And, you know, getting wisdom from my fellow coach colleagues and MDRT colleagues, and just, you know, spend time thinking about what I could take away from their experiences and bring across into my own business life. You know, I think that's the learning and that's the teaching. Mm. Also, you know, one of the other things that, you know, when I was thinking about what I was going to talk to you about today, mentoring is a huge thing. Firstly, to be mentored by people that have been there and done it, but the opportunity to be a mentor to other people. And through MDRT, you know, somebody approached me and said, "Katie, would you be my mentor?" And there's nothing like mentoring somebody else to really refine your own thinking on certain aspects, and clarify your own proposition and, you know, what you're doing in terms of building a business and delivering services to clients in the best possible way. So, you know, I'd encourage any entrepreneur, wherever they are in their business life, to actually look for people to be mentees. Is that the right word? To mentor. Yeah. Because I really found that going through that journey myself actually, you know, gave me probably more than it gave my mentee. So what do you think of that, Dan?
Yeah, it's interesting because actually I kind of, perhaps, when you talk about teachings and learnings, and I kind of perhaps sort of, it's interesting you picked up on that as I was just sort of saying the sort of vague question, I suppose. But there's a relationship between the two, actually. Yeah. I agree. I've done some mentoring work, and it's funny, articulating what you know forces you to, well, think about it first, then get it in a way that the other person can understand, and that process is clarifying. So I agree. The kind of there's a relationship between the person who's being mentored and the mentor themselves, yeah. And it's not linear. There's a clarification process there, and I think what's interesting with a lot of what you're saying is sort of the importance of other people around you.
Yeah.
Regardless of the. Well, not regardless, but like the relationship is almost not the point. The point is there's an exchange of information or exchange of knowledge or of perspective.
Yeah, an exchange of ideas, you know, and if two people have got an idea and they share them, then each of them have got two ideas, and we know all this stuff. But I think you've hit on a really interesting point there. Articulation is fundamentally important. You cannot have a business. You cannot develop in the business. You cannot, you know, move forwards unless you've got a good articulation of your proposition. And that doesn't happen overnight. And, you know, we're learning every day and we're gaining wisdom every day, I hope. But hearing yourself articulate it to somebody else increases your confidence, increases the, you know, the value of your proposition. And, you know, if you are then going to go and talk to clients about how your proposition can solve their problems, you've got to have a very confident way of articulating what it is that you can do for them. And so, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head there, Dan. Having a mentee means that you're forced into a situation of articulating. It's your elevator pitch, but so much more. You know, think about our elevator pitch, but, you know, actually, you know, people want to spend time with other people, and, you know, you've got the opportunity perhaps to articulate your proposition, you know, over a space of minutes, hours, you know, who knows how you articulate it. You know, it's not necessarily all verbal, is it? It's in the world of websites. I always work on the basis there are 50 strong people that will be attracted to my way of articulating things. You know, and those 50 people will refer me on to 50 people like them who will respond well to the way that I articulate things. And it's no more than that. You're actually not looking for more than that. You're not necessarily looking for the masses. You've just got to find those 50 people.
That's interesting. There's a great book I'd recommend called This Is Marketing by Seth Godin.
Oh, yes.
And you'd be pleased to know that your advice is his advice. he talks about the minimum viable market.
Yeah.
And this is what you just said, 50 people, that's what you need. Because if you look after them, they'll tell 50 people. Yeah. And you could even dial it down to 10. 10 people will tell 10, that's 100. They tell another 10, that's 1,000. And so actually a lot of what I think is great advice from Seth Godin, and you've lived this and experienced it, is narrowing your focus to be very specific and actually true to you, because then it has a reality and a truth and authenticity that you can stand behind as a business and a service or a product. Then those people will fall in love with you because you're designing it for them, not for aggregate masses.
Yeah, and this is it, Dan. You probably find that they're very similar people to you because you know, you want to work with people that are like-minded. And you're right, it's only 10. You've got to be able to articulate it well and confidently to 10 people. That's it. And, you know, I think the joy from creating your experience like that, creating your business like that, is going to shine through because you're in your sweet spot again, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly that. I think there's some really good insight in there. I just want to sort of dive back a step, because you were talking about the sort of some of the challenges you faced in the business and whether that's keeping up with technology, things that you think you haven't perhaps kept on top of in terms of the structure of the business, it was your father's exit from the business and the challenges that took, and perhaps implied in that is the sort of looking forward as well as looking what's currently there. Now, so you've had, we're coming out of lockdown kind of thing, and you're coming out of it with a new business that's only very fresh out. But so you've had 30 years from straight out of school kind of thing, into a business, a family business, and now there's been this massive change in the world. And in the middle of all that massive change, you've had a very personal change in terms of you've got a new business coming out of this family business.
Yes.
Just take us through what's happened for you, and how have you kind of dealt with this period of quite profound change?
Yeah, well, that's a good question, Dan. I'm not going to linger on the negativity, to be honest with you, because I don't think that's necessarily terribly helpful. But, you know, think in terms of the fact that business fundamentally changed. My dad and my co-director exited from a very large business, you know, very large family business. And I was just one person. And actually, the things that then happened didn't go as smoothly as I might have wanted them to go. And, you know, there was a very steep learning curve over a relatively short period of time. And, you know, the result of that is one new business that's come out of the COVID experience, and I run a separate wills and trusts and estate planning business that's been there through that. And, you know, the last 18 months has taught me a huge amount. Again, Strategic Coach have been quite influential in this period of time. They were an organization that pivoted extremely quickly in terms of, rather than us all rocking up in Toronto once a quarter to be on a workshop with Dan Sullivan, they had to pivot instantly to deliver high quality coaching workshops in a virtual way. And my business had to pivot in exactly the same way. You know, I couldn't go and see clients. I was very, very conscious of the fact that my clients who are, you know, all in the retirement phase of life were not having a joyful experience. You know, how could I deliver our services in a virtual way that was meaningful, not just in terms of, you know, financial planning solutions, more particularly in being a loving support to people that I cared about. And the families that I cared about during that period of time. So the new business has actually been born out of the experiences that we had during that. It's a completely virtual operation. You know, everything is digitalized, but it's keeping in mind the fact that my clients are in the retirement phase of life. But I found that we were so much more able to be connected, not just to our clients, but their families too. You know, the really fantastic, powerful Zoom conversations we had with families about their financial planning aspirations and goals and the legacies that my clients wanted to leave their children and their grandchildren. You know, we spent time thinking about charitable and philanthropic endeavors, and that is actually a big part of the new business, you know, going forwards from here, is how we can incorporate some really great philanthropic planning that also supports the client and their family and passing it down to the next generation to be involved with, you know, some really lovely things that I feel we're adding to the services that we provide that will enable families to leave incredible legacies.
I love the idea of legacy. In fact, there's a great one of my podcasts is with a woman called Ada Paris, and she's an entrepreneur, but she's also an artist. Funnily enough, this is the theme recurring. Yeah. But she has an art piece that's about legacy generation. What do you bequeath future generations? Yeah. And it really made me think a bit longer term. Yeah. And like, you know, I haven't got any resolution to this, by the way, but it's interesting you're talking about legacy. And it's something I think that oftentimes we're so focused on the short term, like even just this year is short term. But I had, what is the impact to future legacies and future generations? You said you had a steep learning curve.
Yeah.
So what have you learned?
I've learned that I think that collaboration thing is an important thing, Dan, that I've learned, is having the right people around you first and foremost. Because in times of trouble, in times of business crisis or whatever, you need to have your own support system, whatever that looks like. And I would say that during the great times, you need to remember that you have to prepare for the times that you're thrown off course. And it's, you know, in the great times that you're building the strength for the future, and we don't know what's around the corner. For me, I think I said to you yesterday, you know, Dan Sullivan and Jim Rohn were probably the two things that really resonated for me last year, the way that I got through some challenges and come out the other side. I have to say that I love to read, and I like reading books, you know, about business development, but about personal development, personal growth, spiritual growth. You know, for me, that is hugely, hugely fundamental and important, because, you know, I just feel that that keeps me centered. And I like to start my day in peace and quiet with a bit of meditation. Meditation means so many different things to so many different people, Dan. And you know, I'm sure you'd have a different story about meditation to me and everybody else. But I think you've got to find a way to be quiet and quiet your mind in order for you to successfully build a powerful day. And I'm just, you know, I'm talking about moving forwards a day at a time. Yeah, but you know, setting goals for the future we know is very important too. Building in some accountability there, making sure that the team you've got are, you know, are supporting that, are moving in the same direction. We don't all have the same goals and aspirations for ourselves personally. And, you know, I think that that needs to be incorporated in a business. What are the individual's personal aspirations in a business? You know, as long as we've all got a, you know, a solid, clear way forward for the business, we're visualizing the same outcome for the business, we should all have room to grow individually in our roles there. So, you know, these are the things that I've learned. You know, this is a useful opportunity to start articulating that, or articulate again, because I've got my first quarterly meeting tomorrow with my team, and you know, a big part of that is going to be looking at the vision for the future of the business, but breaking that down into, you know, what does the next month look like? What does the next quarter look like? It's progress and not perfection, as Dan would say, but we're moving in the right direction.
I think it sounds great. I mean, I think this idea of quieting your mind to build a powerful day.
Yeah.
I think we should put that on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Quiet your mind to build a powerful day. That's a great one. And I think in terms of this idea of, you know, we're so entrepreneurs can be very busy people. We're always doing things and creating things, but actually having time to quiet and do and just be. This is the spiritual thing, I think, is what you're referring to. And this is what I get from spiritual growth, is that, you know, connecting with your spirit, whatever that is, this indefinable thing that's like, if you're swamped with tweets and emails and tasks and activity and running around, your inner quieter voice can't speak to you, your intuition, your sort of a feel of the thing. So I think quieting your mind, for me anyway, I start my day with a period of, I call it meditation, but quieting my mind. Yeah. And yeah. I do a lot of journaling. And actually, I want to talk to you about journaling, because I know that's something you've been very, very keen on. Could you speak to your journaling practice?
Yeah. So, I do it on and off. This whole quieting of my mind is a really important thing that happens every day. And just one thing I want to say, Dan, just having heard you speak there, is how often are we in silence? How often do we have quiet? Actually, you know, as we sit here in our offices, and I'm in a reasonably quiet office, I can hear noise all the time. It's actually quite a challenge to quiet your mind. And, you know, if you've never done it or you don't do it, then it probably don't know what might happen if you did. I've got to be honest, I put my AirPods in because that really does successfully block out the noise. Just put some noise cancelling headphones on with no music. And I find that that's actually really quite helpful. Journaling has been very powerful, is very powerful. There's a chap, Benjamin Hardy, who is one of our colleagues on Strategic Coach, and he's written some great books. He's written a book with Dan. I was really privileged to be able to get him on stage to speak at Million Dollar Roundtable a couple of years ago. And he did a session on journaling and the power of journaling and, you know, thinking about future Katie. What does future Katie look like? You know, if future Katie needs to look like this, what does Katie have to do today? And, you know, and putting your hopes and aspirations and desires down in a journal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being able to do that is very, very powerful. And it doesn't necessarily come easily. But I find after, you know, 20 minutes of peace and quiet, actually being able to, you know, put something on a piece of paper, you know, this is what the outcomes that I'd like from today. This is my desires for today. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm having these interactions today and I want it to look like this. Because, you know, I'm going to quote Dan here because it's something that I love. Our eyes only see and our ears only hear what our brain is looking for. And so our responsibility is to make sure that our brain knows what it's looking for. Because, you know, I think we will have far more powerful intention, you know, if we've actually worked on that at the beginning of the day. So that's how I like to do it then.
Yeah, I mean, that power of intention is really important. I mean, that whole, the way to think about it is if you've, you know, say you bought a mini car and you're driving around, suddenly you see minis everywhere, right? You just tune into it. And so this idea of you only see what you're looking for. So the world is a complex place and there's multifaceted things going on, information you're receiving, people you're going to meet. And if you're not looking for what you want. By the way, Dan Sullivan on my podcast with him, he said he's a powerful wanter. He wants things, and he writes
it just because you want it.
Yeah, and so that. But the point being, that's, you could call that a goal or a vision, right? You want something, but then you start to filter the world by the way that that can help you get to or be blocked to get to this thing you want. And you might want something, a relationship, you might want health or well-being, it may be financial, it might be wanting things is multifaceted. A desire, that a human desires is a multifaceted. But actually having clarity on what those are, because oftentimes you don't, it's just a muddle of things. Also, that they are yours and not just put on you by the culture you're in, or that you've seen something on social media that looks cool, so therefore you want it. That actually it's true to you, and you can set that intention, and then you can start to see it. And I think that journaling practice is something I'm very keen on. Ben Hardy, by the way, he co-wrote the book Who Not How with Dan Sullivan.
Yeah.
He wrote another book prior to that called Personality Isn't Permanent.
Yeah, brilliant book.
Personality isn't permanent. And there's a big thing in there about reflecting on your life, journaling, and then future Dan or future Katie. Yeah. So can you, this concept of future Katie, just kind of tell us a little bit about future Katie. What's she going to be like?
Oh, yeah, well, what can I say? Actually, one thing that I just wanted to add to what we've both just said there about the journaling and the desires, the creating the future, actually a massive part of this is the feeling. The wanting is one thing, but it's the feeling that creates it. You know, it's the passion behind it that's going to be the creative force. And here we are, Dan, we've gone full circle in an hour. It's back to that creation. I really think that it's, you know, yes, wanting it, but actually the feeling, the desire, to quote Neville Goddard, assuming the wish fulfilled, that is the powerful creation or creative part of this process. Future Katie is she's growing a very successful business with all the right who's around her, with the freedom to work from anywhere in the world. And when I use the word work, I don't mean work. I mean to be in her sweet spot, her unique ability place, doing the things that she loves to do, which is talking to people about their lives and their goals and their aspirations and the things they love and the legacy they want to leave.
Well, that sounds bloody brilliant.
Brilliant.
I think that's definitely something that you should aspire to. And what's interesting is, I've had this conversation with myself about future Dan. And oftentimes you've got to make sacrifices in the present to have future Dan happen, right? So if I'm eating cake every day, I can't be the lean version of Dan I want to be.
Lean machine that you want to.
Yeah, exactly that. So it's kind of like, and so this is a quite a useful sort of tactic to trick yourself. Like, he's sort of the future you will thank today you to lay off the cake, right? Or whatever your thing may or may not be, right? And I think that's something that having that relationship with yourself means you kind of just a dialogue with your future state.
Yeah, the feeling of healthy, very fit, very motivated Dan is the feeling you have to have today, Dan, okay, in order for future Dan to be you know, what you want future Dan to be. It's that connecting with the feeling of the wish fulfilled that is the creative power here.
And that's great. I mean, so we've got, again, we have gone full circle. The creative in you is active every day in your journaling practice, in your meditation practice, in your business practice. Yeah. And what I think we've got illustrated here is no matter your discipline that you're in, you are a creative. You are creating your own world. And by the way, you are doing this whether you want to or not. It is happening whether you're intentional about it or not.
I totally agree, Dan. Right on board with you there.
Yeah, and what often happens is stuff happens in people's lives, and obviously things do happen, but there's a point here where you can start to design what you want and create what you want, and that will require a certain discipline or a certain openness, and it's a change in how your mind's working, and perhaps some of this unconscious or subconscious thoughts to be more conscious so you can channel it and you're less sort of reactive in life. So all of that, 100%, that's really, really, really helped me personally, particularly the last 18 months. All that aspect. So I think that this is an interesting pattern that you get the same value, and I think it's really good for anybody listening. Right, we're edging towards the end of our time in our podcast. So I'm going to ask you the question I asked everybody at the end. There's all this advice out there for entrepreneurs, and particularly young entrepreneurs. What advice should young entrepreneurs, people starting out, or any entrepreneur, what should they ignore? What advice should they ignore?
What advice should they ignore? I mean, you could say what advice should they take instead. I don't know. I would say ignore your nearest and dearest. To be fair, only take advice from the people that are paying the checks. Because you know, you've got to have skin in the game. Is the first thing. So be wary of who you take advice from. I think that's something I would say. Other people's opinions of you don't matter.
Hmm.
And, you know, so, and this is a challenge to me. This is maybe a challenge to you, Dan, I don't know. But, you know, we do crave the, you know, positive feedback and opinions of other people. But do you know what? It really doesn't matter. Really doesn't matter. And then the other thing is, if you've been told you can do it on your own and you can do all of that stuff for yourself, that's, can I use the word crap on your podcast? That is a load of brown stuff. You need support. You need help, for your own mental well-being. And you are not good at everything, but there are other people out there that will want to help you and support you. And yeah, it might mean that you've got to throw some money at it. You're buying in the capabilities and wisdom of other people. And that is a necessary thing sometimes when you're building a new business. But I think those are the things that I would say.
There's loads of good stuff in there. And, I think there's a whole series of themes in here that have been really, deep in the sense of like wisdom earned over a successful career or multiple decades. But this idea of the network of people around you, the people that you can pull on to help you, being open to that, and again having, I guess, the strength of your own convictions at the same time to sort of walk the path and to not be distracted and not get, and just to stick to what's important, to focus on the essential in your business. Well, that's brilliant. So thank you so much for sharing so openly. Where, if people want to suss you out a bit more, where can we find you online? Where's a good place to learn more about you?
Well, I'd go to the Montgomery website email me through there, help@montgomeryep.co.uk. I'd love to hear from anybody that wants to chat.
Well, I shall put all that in the show notes. So if you email help@montgomeryep.co.uk or you go to the website montgomeryep.co.uk, and I think you're on Twitter @KatieBaxter. So you can send a tweet if you feel the urge. Connect on social media. But Katie, thank you so much for being so open and sharing with us. And,
thank you.
And wish you all, Yeah, and I wish you all the best with the new business. I am 100% certain it'll be a rip-roaring success.
Thank you, Dan. Me too.
And I'll see you soon. Take care. Take care, everybody. I'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Do you want to get the top 5 tidbits from each episode emailed to your inbox every Friday? Yes, you do. It saves you having to go through and make notes and make a note of all the books and all the ideas that are in the podcast. We go through and we choose the top 5 we like, plus put all the links into that email. So if you just go up to honeyibluewupthebusiness.com, yes, that's honeyibluewupthebusiness.com, and just enter your email address. There's a little box, just enter it in and we will send you that information, and it saves you having to make notes and all that. That's make your life a bit easier. And of course, if you did enjoy the episode, please consider subscribing. We are trying to help people through this. So the more people that subscribe, review, rate on Apple, Google, Podcasts, Spotify, the more people will see it and the more we can help. So help us help other people, other entrepreneurs like you. And before I go, I've got to say big up to my company, the tech department, the company we blew up and put back together again. They're generously supporting me on this mission through the podcast. So if you guys want to have a look at a company that can really help you improve your technology, make it better so your business gets better too, boosting your sales and your profit and a bit more sanity in your life, a little less stress, then head up to thetechdept.com, the tech department. My company, give us a look. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time.